I'm really pleased to be able to talk to you. And among the reasons I'm pleased to be able to talk to you is that I used to talk about macular degeneration and the patients would go out all frightened because they would see a potential future and it didn't look so good.
Can't hear you.
Okay.
Well, and we have a solution for that.
I was hoping we could do this without the scope, without a microphone, but can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I used to give talks and would hate to face the audience to give the talk because I would be telling people the potential future and it didn't always look so good and patients would go out very concerned. But we have a treatment now that's quite effective for a large percentage of people with macular degeneration. So now I'm very pleased to be able to talk.
Apparently, would you turn that off? We're hearing it in the other room, so maybe you could step a little, talk a little louder, and we will solve this problem.
Yes.
Okay.
You can also move closer if you want. We have seats further up.
So, but now we have a treatment, and in the future, I'm anticipating even better methods of treating macular degeneration. And I've seen a whole sea change. I mean, I used to just hold people's hands as their vision went down, and now I give them their lives back, and that's really nice to be able to do. And so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about macular degeneration. So first, I'll just give you an idea of how we see. And the eye, it's kind of a simplistic analogy, but it does, the eye is like a camera, and it's an optical system. And it has an optical system in the front, a lens, and a cornea, and those focus an image on the back of the eye. And here you can see the eye chart focused on the retina. And the retina is like the film in a camera, except it's more like a TV camera. It converts the image into an electrical signal that the brain processes into what we see. So what is the macula? Why do we call it macular degeneration? Well, macula is Latin for spot. And lutea is yellow. And when the first people doing anatomy were doing anatomical dissections of the eye, they noticed that the retina would turn gray, unlike our retinas. The retina would turn gray, and right in the center would be a yellow spot, hence the yellow spot or macular lutea. And to us, it doesn't look yellow. If we look with a green light, sometimes it looks yellow. But this spot right here is very important because that's our detailed vision. So we have two types of vision. We have panoramic vision, gives us, so we don't, if we're walking along, we don't fall over the curb because we can see it, even if we're not looking directly at it. Walking down the stairs, walking in a room where there are objects, and so your panoramic vision gives you a lot of information. But then you need detailed information, and the brain isn't large enough to have detailed information throughout the entire eye. So a very small section of it has the detailed vision. And that's this region here called the macula. And with that, we can see the tiny E, or the tiny letters on the bottom line of a vision chart. But you move just a little bit off center, and the letters have to get bigger. And you move even more off center, and then you end up with the big E that you see on the doctor's chart. So if the central area isn't working right, then we lose a lot of detailed information very quickly. So what is macular degeneration? There are two types that I'll be talking about, dry and wet. The dry is sort of the wasting away of the central retina. We don't know why it happens, but this part, you can see here where inside the arrows that the color is different, and there's part of the retina missing there. And so that central vision, this is this little oval here, that's where the detailed vision is, isn't there. So people who have this don't have the detailed vision. And we have new imaging methods that give us information about both wet and dry macular degeneration. And this shows you some of it. If you go for an exam, you'll have some of these imaging methods done. So I'm just showing you what we look at. Here's a color picture. That's the same as what we see when we look in. Here is an angiogram. We inject the dye in the veins. We put we take a picture with a special camera, and we have a blue filter in front of the light and a yellow filter in front of the film or the detector. And then we also have an infrared version that does the same thing, and that gives us different information. We also have autofluorescence, and for dry macular degeneration, we can use that to determine, to suggest who will have trouble in the future and who may not. Because some people will get dry macular degeneration, but it won't spread. But when you see these bright areas, that means that this area is glowing. With a special camera, we can see the glow. And if the glow extends under the central retina, then that means that in the future they're likely to lose the central vision. One other method that we have recently takes an optical cross-section, and this is really very helpful to us. This line here is the detector that turns the light into electricity, called the rods and cones. And when we can see that, we know that the retina is likely to be working well. So what is macular, here's wet macular degeneration. Now, wet macular degeneration is the formation of a vascular scar tissue. Now, the vascular scar tissue is not needed, it's not wanted. There's certain peculiarities about the anatomy of the eye that promote this type of degeneration. It's part of the normal healing process, but it's the healing process gone awry. And when we see it small like this, there isn't usually much effect on the vision. But in the past, we weren't able to do very much to stop it, and inexorably it would enlarge into something like that, which would take away a lot of the central vision, and these people with that kind of vision would be grossly unable to do the things that they used to be able to do. Here is a cross-section showing fluid in the retina, that swelling of the retina that we can see now with our new imaging techniques that occurs with the wet macular degeneration. And it all comes from this vascular scar tissue that's growing here under the retina, which on this optical section you can see here. And the angiography actually shows us the blood vessels. You can see this is the normal vasculature of the eye. And here you can see the vascular scar tissue that's growing under the central retina. And here you can see that it's leaking fluid and blood. The blood looks black here. So why is it age-related? Because it occurs mostly in people over the age of 65. The earliest cases may show up at age 55, but it's mostly age over 65. And there's early, intermediate, and advanced macular degeneration. And a large part of the population has early, but may not ever advance to the more significant or vision affecting type of macular degeneration. But you can see here that somewhere between 2-3% of people over the age of 55 have some degree of macular degeneration, and over the age of about 70, that used to be the percentage of people who would be unable to drive, unable to read, unable to do a lot of the things that they would normally do. So who is at risk? People with light-colored eyes, blue eyes, are more at risk. The pigment seems to be in some way protective. So Scandinavian countries, the incidence is much higher, for example. And African Americans, the incidence is quite low. I will show you pictures of drusen, but it is age-related, and you can see that people between 70 and 80 are 5 times more likely to have advanced macular degeneration than people who are 60 to 65. I mentioned race. Gender does not affect the incidence. There are things that you do from day to day that can make a difference in getting macular degeneration. smokers are more likely to develop macular degeneration. So if they're at risk of developing macular degeneration to begin with, smoking increases that risk. Sun exposure, probably early in life, so in your teen years and 20s or earlier, if you protect your eyes with sunglasses, that may help. High blood pressure, if that's brought under control, that helps. And obesity, if that's controlled, that can help. Now, there's a whole new world of genetic research that is finding information that we couldn't do before, that's just now coming into being. And we're finding the genes that are highly correlated with wet and dry macular degeneration. And at the moment, we're just gathering this information, but it may be useful to tailor the treatment that we give to people. If we know their genetic background, we know what drugs are likely to work and which ones are not. And then maybe longer in the future, we'll be able to do genetic therapy to try to prevent macular from degeneration from occurring. One of the people who is doing this research is Kang Zhang, and he's with us at the University of California at San Diego. And anybody who's interested in participating in genetic research for macular degeneration, if you contact the Shiley Eye Center, you can get connected to Dr. Zhang, and he would be most interested.
And I think he does that at no charge, is that right?
Yes. Dr. Huang? He has, a lot, most of it is no charge. So why is macular degeneration important? Well, people value their vision a lot, even though it's such a small part of the body. The eye is important to most people. And these are efforts to try to determine how vision loss impacts somebody, comparing it to other deficits. And you can see here between really good and really bad that we're somewhere in the middle. And that it affects the what's done in day-to-day existence. And people, there's an interesting thing, I'm not sure if this is going to be so anymore, but in the past when we didn't have a good treatment for macular degeneration, if one eye was involved, that already told the person that they were at risk. And now they sat there waiting for the other eye, for the other shoe to drop. And they would be more disturbed by that than people who had both eyes involved. But now that we have a treatment and people may not have that severe fear, that may not be so. The equivalence of losing a vision, of being legally blind, or 20/200 vision in both eyes is equivalent to a bone marrow transplant or lung disease or AIDS. So what happens to the vision? Well, you don't see, unless there's a hemorrhage, you don't see a black spot. What you see is just detail that's missing, and or a big blur, and here's like facial details completely gone. Or if the retina is distorted by scar tissue, then the brain sees this as a distortion in the vision. And this can affect reading. It's hard to read when you can't see the words, or when the words are severely distorted. Same thing for driving. So what do we look for when you come to the ophthalmologist? So we see, we look for risk factors. This is intermediate macular degeneration. And these yellow spots are called drusen. And when we see that, that person is more at risk of developing macular degeneration than somebody who doesn't have them. In cross-section, you can see the little bumps. So these come in categories. If there are just a few, there's not much risk. If there are more, there's more risk. And if there are a lot, there's more risk. And we can grade this. And we can actually, this is from the age-related eye disease study, or AREDS. And what they demonstrated is that if you have category 3, then that means that you have about 5% risk per year of going to advanced macular degeneration. And if you have category 4, which means that one eye is involved and the other eye has drusen, then that means it's 10% risk per year. And after 5 years, that means that there's a 50% chance that the vision will be lost. These are old statistics. So this is what happens over time. We see them early, we see a little red spot, and we know what's coming. And over time, it gets bigger and bigger, and it usually stops about this stage, but it could get as big as that, meaning that a large amount of the central vision is lost, and people with that have a lot of trouble getting around, doing the things they want to do from day to day. With our new treatments, we can keep it at this stage, or after the treatment is done, sometimes I have to look back in the chart to see why I'm treating the patient, because it looks so normal, I'm wondering, was there really ever any disease there? And I look back in the chart and then I see the pictures and I say, oh yeah. So what can you do to reduce the risk? Don't smoke. Control your high blood pressure. Sunglasses for your children, perhaps, younger people, because that's probably where it's most effective. Have an eye exam over the age of 60 to see if you're one of the people who have the risk factors. And if the risk factors are present, then you want to have an exam every 6 months, and you want to test your vision with a grid that I'll show you a picture of in a minute, and you want to take certain vitamins that have been demonstrated to reduce the risk of macular degeneration, advanced macular degeneration. So this is the AMSLA grid, and when somebody looks at that spot, it only takes a couple of seconds to do this. You can put it on the refrigerator, on the bathroom mirror, something you see every day. You look, you see some distortion there that wasn't there the day before. Immediately, within 1 to 2 days, you want to go to your ophthalmologist to have that checked. And if you are one of the people in category 3 or 4 at risk of developing advanced macular degeneration, there are vitamin preparations that are out there that you can buy in any drugstore. There's PreserVision. So the ARIS, the age-related eye disease study, was a study to determine whether certain vitamins and minerals might help. And they tested vitamins A, C, and E, and, actually not vitamin A, it's beta-carotene, which is a precursor of vitamin A, and zinc in high doses, normal, higher than what you're going to get in the standard vitamin preparations. And they found there's about a 25% protective effect. So 25% of the people who would get advanced macular degeneration, if they take the vitamins, they don't get it. So that's very helpful. There's a second study called ARIDS-2, and they're looking at lutein, zeaxanthin, and omega-3 fatty acid. These are nutritional supplements that you can buy most drugstores or health food stores or food stores. And there's a combination here, and you might look at this website. So that combines the original ARIDS material with the supplements that are in the ARIDS-2 study.
Could we ask you a question, Dr. Obama?
Sure.
I had a patient call me yesterday and say, well, she has a family history of macular degeneration. She's 65. Should she be taking vitamins even though she has no signs?
Okay, so if the drusen don't carry symptoms, so if that person should go to an eye doctor who sees the drusen, then yes. If the drusen are there, it's not necessary. These work as an anti-proliferative material, so they seem to prevent the abnormal blood vessels, the vascular scar tissue, from growing. And that is a present effect, not a future effect. So if you take it, it's not going to prevent macular degeneration in the future. 20 years, it's going to prevent macular degeneration in some people who are at risk. So you should, one, get it, find out if you're at risk. Now, and then two, take it only if the risks are there. If you have a family member who has macular degeneration and you don't have the risk factors, or you're under the age of 55 or 60, then taking the medication is not going to be, at that time, is not going to be of any help, because it won't determine what happens in the future. Now, some of these medications or vitamins have other helpful effects, and so some people feel being on the same vitamins is helpful for people who are up in the age of age-related macular degeneration. But that's a different issue. I wouldn't take it for that. I would just take it if the risk factors are there. If you are a smoker, vitamin A may increase the risk of lung cancer. If you have dry macular degeneration, vitamin A may aggravate that, or beta carotene. So in that situation, there are preparations that are pretty much the same as the Aritz preparation with the beta carotene removed. And those probably have as good effective, preventive effect without the risk of the increased risk of lung cancer. And again, there is a version of MacuSave S that has the vitamin A or beta carotene removed, but has all the other substances plus the nutritional factors in the Aritz too. And I'll just go over a little bit what the eludian and zeaxanthin are. That yellow spot is yellow because of eludian and zeaxanthin. These are the substances that are in the retina here. Now, we're not sure why they're there. There are two possibilities that people talk about. One is blue light is focused at a different, in a different way than the rest of the spectrum. And so in the area where you want to have detailed vision, the blue light may be out of focus and it may blur the image. So removing the blue out of the image may make the image sharper. So that's one possibility. Also, blue light may have more of a detrimental effect on the rods and cones. So this may have a protective effect. And it's been demonstrated that people have who have loss or very little of the eludian, of the yellow material in the retina, are more at risk of developing macular degeneration. And that's the reason why it's been recommended to take these substances to try to increase the amount of that material in the retina. These can be found in food. The zeaxanthin, most anything yellow, and the eludian, as you can see here, in spinach, kale, broccoli, peas, Brussels sprouts, and egg yolk. But it's just, they're not expensive, and it's easy to find these in the drugstores. So advanced macular degeneration. How do we prevent the early stage from, or rather the minimal stage of advanced macular degeneration, from advancing into something that robs of vision? The treatments I'm going to talk about are laser, photodynamic therapy, and agents that block the vascular scar tissue. This is what we used to do, and this used to work about 25% of the time. If the vascular scar tissue was off-center, this is the fovea, the macula, if it was off-center, we could cauterize it with a laser. Problem is, if this was under the central macula, we couldn't use it without destroying the central vision. And about three quarters of these, you would get recurrence, and it would come back and grow right under the central retina. So 25% of the time it worked, about 75% it did not. Then came along something called the porphyrins. Now, some of you may have seen the play that was recently here, or the movie, The Magnus of King George. He had a genetic condition called porphyria. It was an accumulation of blood breakdown products in higher levels than should be there. And it does a number of things. Turns the urine purple, turns the teeth purple. It makes people psychologically altered, and it increases the sensitivity to sunlight on the skin. So people get blisters and bad sunburns. And there is a synthetic form of the porphyrins that we use. Now, this stuff lasts for months, but the synthetic form only lasts for about 1 to 5 days. So there's a synthetic form that we inject into the veins, And then we shine a light on the, a red light, the right wavelength, on the affected area. And this selectively damages these blood vessels here without hurting the overlying retina. So that's one way that we now use. And then the sort of modern miracle today are these medications that block the growth factors that make the abnormal blood vessels and the vascular scar tissue grow. So there is a cascade of events that causes these new blood vessels to grow. It's part of the healing process. So anytime you have an injury, this is going to be part of the process. But in the eye, it doesn't work right. So we want to interfere with it. And one of the major, so it's stimulated by either reduced oxygen or inflammation. And one of the major factors is vascular endothelial growth factor, or VEGF. And that causes the blood vessels to grow. So this little molecule here sits on a receptor in the cells that line the blood vessels and causes them to proliferate. If we can get substance right here that holds on to the VEGF, then it can't attach to the receptor in the cell, and it doesn't, and the rest of what happens doesn't happen. So the VEGF attaches to the endothelial cells, they proliferate, they make new blood vessels, as you're seeing here, they attach to the tissue around it, and it looks sort of like this when it's macular degeneration. So this is the medication that now blocks this. It comes in two forms right now, Avastin and Lucentis. The Avastin is used in cancer therapy to try to prevent blood vessels from growing into tumors. And that was how it was first used. And in small amounts, it can be injected into the eye. The other, the Lucentis, is this active part right here, the purple part. That's the part that attaches to the VEGF. So you don't really need this part. And Genentech went through the trouble, they make both of these medications, of taking off the fragment that is not useful and to make Lucentis. This is the fragment here that is it, Lucentis, and this entire molecule here is the Avastin. And if you sort of glom onto the VEGF, then that prevents it from starting the whole cascade of events that causes the vascular scar tissue to grow. So we inject either one of these substances into the eye to gobble up the VEGF and prevent it from stimulating the blood vessels to grow. So this is what we had. This is what used to happen when we would see people with macular degeneration. It would be an inexorable drop in vision. And then we came out with a first version of these, something that would work on against the VEGF, but it wasn't very strong. And this is the Avastin and the Lucentis. Both of these now will, somebody comes in, usually they already have some loss of vision. And so we give them medication and they recover the vision they've lost, most people. And instead of continuing to drop several lines of vision. And the latest work now compared the two medications, and this was sponsored by the National Institutes of Health, and they found that there was practically no difference between either one of these medications. Now the Lucentis is $2,000 an injection, and there are 12 injections a year, and so you can imagine that the government was not too happy to suddenly have this cost thrown at them, because about 3 to 5 years ago, we didn't have this treatment, and suddenly there it was. And the Avastin, prepared for injection, is about $60 an injection. And being able to determine that there may be no difference between them was very important. Now, Lucentis is the one that is specifically approved by the FDA for treatment of macular degeneration. The Avastin has not been approved specifically, so it's used as an off-label medication. But it appears to work, according to the new study, quite well.
Question.
Yes.
Are those treatments every 6 weeks for those 11 injections?
It's every 4 weeks for Lucentis, and in the CAT study, it was every 4 weeks for Avastin. But most people use the Avastin every 5 weeks. Because it's a larger molecule, it hangs around a little longer. And what we've been doing in some patients after the gross activity has been stopped and the macular degeneration regresses to inactivity, we keep giving it because it wears off, and if we stop giving it, then the VEGF comes back and the disease recurs. So we inject this, and we increase the interval so that they don't have to have injections quite so often. But we can't do that on everybody.
Sure.
And so in the future, there are going to be other parts of the growth of blood vessels, the cascade of events that causes blood vessels to grow, that we can block. And I think Dr. Trinambi will be discussing some of those. So what happens when the treatment doesn't do what we want it to do and the person ends up with decreased vision? Well, they're not, they still have a lot that they can do. And there's a lot out there to help people with a decrease in vision. First, I'd like to mention anybody who's in the VA or who's been in the military and is eligible for VA care. This is one thing that the government provides that doesn't exist outside. It's the Veterans Administration Blind Rehabilitation Centers. These are excellent centers, and there's nothing comparable. And it teaches people with limited vision basically how to get along in life, how to work, how to do their daily activities, all sorts of things, that how to read, how to get devices. It's a six-week course that a person actually lives there and goes through. The Lighthouse International has a lot of instruments and methods that they can talk about too for people who aren't eligible for VA care. There are optical magnifiers, electronic magnifiers in the form of closed circuit television. There's a little camera behind the screen. You look at, you put what you want to look at down there and it blows it up, and you can modify it in several ways to make it easier to see. There are other versions, like a box that has a little camera and light inside and a screen on the surface, and you run it over whatever you want to look at and it magnifies it. There's a talking machine. Kurzweil developed this some 30 years ago, maybe more. And the state of computers was much less than it is now, so it was an amazing thing to do. And he was what brought about the scanning devices that became our Xerox machines, the synthesized voices that are in our daily life now. That all came out of his research. So, in review, I discussed how we see, what the macula is, why the macula is important, the types of macular degeneration, the impact that macular degeneration can have on somebody's life, new imaging methods that we use, new treatments that have made a major difference in the whole approach to macular degeneration, and what to do when you still need help to see and your vision isn't quite 20/20 anymore.
Time for a question or two, and then we're going to take a very short break in case you need to step out for a moment, and then we'll come back and have Dr. Trinambi talk about the research. So this lady has a question here, I think.
The Lucentis injections, are they something that you have to do for the rest of your life? Do you know yet?
Apparently. The original study... Well, I'll get into that in a minute. The original study was for 2 years. And then when the medication was stopped, a certain percentage, maybe half, the disease would come back. So when we realized that most people needed to have continued treatment, essentially for the rest of their lives. But there are new medications that are on the way that last longer, so there may be modifications in that. The interval between treatments, some people require the treatment every 4 to 5 weeks. Other people, we can let it go up to 3 months, and it'll still have enough suppression to prevent the disease from coming back.
And can it, my husband gets it in one eye, can it work over?
No.
Through the blood system to the other eye and affect it in any way?
It is picked up from the eye into the system, but it is so diluted that the amount that reaches the other eye is too small to have a beneficial effect.
Is there another question? The gentleman in the light blue.
I was wondering, what stage is the bone marrow transplant?
Stem cell. There's some research being done at both UCSD and at Scripps Clinic on stem cell. It's really early. They're talking, I'm not sure it's going to be part of macular degeneration, maybe part of other eye vision affecting conditions. And right now, they're out there learning what works and what doesn't. And it's probably going to be maybe 20 years before we see the effect of that research.
And Dr. Tanambi made mention that. I will mention there's other countries doing it, and in fact Germany just this last week shut down that, you know, because people will say, come and give us $35,000 and we'll give you these stem cell injections, but nobody knows that they,
yeah,
there's they work a, or not. So
there's a lot of sham operations.
Yeah, they have to be cautious.
Yeah.
The gentleman behind you then?
Yes, the Lucentis injections, do they work for both wet and dry macular degeneration?
No, that's only for the wet. There are medications being studied for the dry. They haven't given us the information of the results of those studies yet. And if they're beneficial, the FDA will approve it. And if they're not beneficial, we'll have to keep looking.
Okay.
Can
we have the lady in the
Is there a variation in the progression of the dry macular degeneration?
Yes, everybody's different. Some people will get a focus and it won't grow. Other people will continue to grow inexorably. And that was one of the imaging methods I showed you. Sort of helps us know which ones are more at risk of having an enlarged area. People, the difference between dry is that the wet before, when it would take away vision, it would do it over a few days to a few weeks. The dry does it over generally years. But everybody's a little different.
The gentleman on the side there.
You said something about Germany shutting down. Would that be XL?
That's
XL?
Right. Yes. Yes, that's the company they just shut down.
They weren't, was it too expensive or the results weren't there?
Well, they had no supporting evidence for what they were doing, and they gave them a little bit of a window to continue and come up with the evidence, but they didn't, so they closed them down.
Yeah. I would guess that that might be similar to the operation like in Mexico. They had on 60 Minutes in Mexico, people with Lou Gehrig's disease were getting treatment for that this guy said worked, and it didn't, but he got very rich giving it.
I'm afraid we always see things like that when there's a disease that we don't have terrific treatment for or restoring vision for. People get desperate. Yes?
What's the relationship between wet and dry AMD? Can dry evolve into wet?
They can both occur in the same eye. The genes involved in each of these are different, and the appearance is different, but they can coexist.
I think we have time for one more question, and then we were going to allow you a little bit of a break and come back at 11 if that sounds good to everybody. Yes?
I had an angiogram done, but there was no dye injected. So how valid is that angiogram?
The new imaging devices make it possible for us to see the dye in much lower concentrations than we used to be able to see when we used film. And you can take the dye by mouth with in orange juice so that you don't taste it. And it doesn't give you the very early phase, so you don't see the those nice pictures I showed with the real sharp blood vessels, but it does show leaky blood vessels and it shows where they are. And so, yes, you can get valid information from that.
So I think...